A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to The Female Gaze. I'm Jessie Katz, sitting with a little sweet birthday baby.
Barely. It's tomorrow. My birthday is tomorrow,
but when
guys.
This post, it will have already happened. Oh, yeah. So there's some time jumping for
Hell
you.
Hell yeah.
Defying the space-time continuum, as always, on
as
The Female
always.
Gaze.
I'm so stoked. I'm actually never always... that's a lie. I'm never excited for my birthday. Like, it's always something that people
are
like...
Like, even as a child?
Yeah, never.
Oh,
I don't know
about?
Why. And it's crazy because my...
Attention.
I know. You would think. But I think it's weird when like it's all the focus is on me. Like everyone, we're going to go do this lunch for me and you all have to do this for
me. You don't get to choose.
Yeah. And also I feel like I hate when people invite me to birthdays and it's like a million people at a table and you don't like, I don't know. I don't want to do that to people.
Sure.
So whatever.
So what are you doing?
Well, I don't know.
There's a surprise in store.
Exactly. So
That's
we'll see.
Nice.
I know for sure that. So my best friend is having me over for brunch Saturday, and then tomorrow, I was gonna say her name. I guess I could if I wanted to.
Who?
Alicia, my lady.
You're outing your girlfriend.
I outed my girlfriend. Yeah. But that she's planning something for tomorrow. So who knows?
Nice.
We'll see.
Do you have any resolutions for this next year of your life? Do you do that for birthdays?
I don't, but I think this year, because I'm like approaching my 30s, I really... Jessie's like, eye roll.
In the distant horizon.
In the distant horizon, but I really do need to be more financially savvy.
Like, a good one.
I need to start saving, and I need to start like thinking about the fact that I'm an adult, and that I need to start having some fucking money. I can't be living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
So that would be my resolution.
Good. That's solid.
Yeah.
I've adopted this new mantra recently that I want to recommend to everybody.
Give it to me.
So, during Passover, the Jewish tradition of Passover, you traditionally sing this song during the Passover Seder, which is called Dayenu. And
Dayenu.
Wow. Yeah. Such a good Jew. Mm-hmm. Who knew?
My best friend, her husband's Jewish, so... And they've been together for a million years, and every Hanukkah, I know the whole Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam.
Whoa.
I can do the whole thing.
You're a good friend.
Been to Passover.
Good friend indeed.
I know about opening the door to Elijah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You remember these things better than I do, I think.
Yeah, so go ahead.
So Dayenu means it would have been enough, basically. And so you sing the song at Passover because you're going through all the things that God did for the Jewish people. Like he led us out of Egypt. He did the 10 plagues on the Pharaoh, blah, blah, blah. So you're listing all these things he did. And at the end you say, Dayenu, it would have been enough if he had only done this one thing. And he also did this and that and that. And if he had only done that, it would have been enough. But then he also did this. That would have been enough. But then he also did that. Okay. So lately, I've heard a couple of people in casual conversation use the word Dayenu, which I fucking love.
Are they Jewish?
Half and half. I've heard it come up on a few podcasts lately. Contexts are totally non-religious. Sometimes people are talking about Trump and it's like, if we could have proven tax fraud, that would have been enough, and collusion would have been enough. Da, da, da. Like Dayenu, any one of a million things Trump has done would have been enough to like end most presidencies. So I've been thinking a lot about this word and how I kind of carry around this guilt with me every day that I'm never doing enough things. I'm never accomplishing enough. And
you mean for yourself?
For myself. Or like every day at the end of the day, I haven't fixed all of my problems and I haven't gotten better at everything I want to be better at. Mm. And I need to start letting go of that.
Yeah.
And I need to start feeling like if I did one thing well each day, Dayenu.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, if I meditated, Dayenu. If I had a good day at my job, Dayenu.
Yeah.
If I wrote 2 pages of something that I'm writing, Dayenu.
Yeah.
Like just one small thing is enough.
Yeah.
Because if I put together 365 days
you're gonna
of doing one thing well, no, then that's...
Oh, sorry. I was going to say the opposite. Absolutely. But I was going to say if you continue putting a million things on your agenda one day, you're only going to disappoint yourself.
Yeah. And then you get paralyzed at the insurmountability of doing a million things well every day.
Exactly.
So one thing a day,
Dayenu. Dayenu.
And some days, no things. And that's fine, too.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, like, I don't have any things ever. I just wake up. do my thing, go to sleep. But maybe I should do the opposite and, you know,
I mean, look, I'm not really a list person. Mm. This is not like I don't have a mood board in my apartment that I'm checking myself on. It's just this general feeling of I always want to be better at everything and constantly feeling like I'm failing.
Is that the only child syndrome?
Maybe.
I don't know. I just want to like set an intention, you know, like for me, I just want to have a happy day.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's always my intention. Like, let's just be happy.
That's
smile at someone on the street.
God,
you
that's
know?
Another thing. I was just talking to my therapist about that. I was like, I'm petrified at the thought that I might discover something makes me happy that wasn't what I thought would make me happy.
Yeah.
So like I thought my whole life I needed to be a successful writer to be happy. And I was like, I'm terrified at the thought that I might wake up tomorrow and realize if I have a job that I love and I'm in a relationship that makes me happy, that's enough.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Because then I'll have to let go of this identity that I was clinging to my whole life that like the purpose of my life is X.
Yeah.
And then finding out that it might actually be Y.
Yeah.
Is
scary.
Scary.
It was
but also fine because who gives a shit? Because the entire point of anything in this blip of a millisecond that we're on the earth is to be happy, right? And to not fuck with other people's happiness. Right. So if I discover that just eating oranges every day makes me happy, then I should just do that till I die.
Yeah. And I think even going back to what you were just saying is you don't want to disappoint yourself and you don't want to fail or not be better at the thing. So in the back of your head, maybe your subconscious is like you weren't this like Steven Spielberg, therefore you're a disappointment.
Right.
When in reality, you're like, you have great friends.
Right.
You know, you have a great apartment.
And
you
maybe if I did become the Spielberg, I would be alone and isolated and only have my work and still be unhappy. I mean, this is the whole thing about why I used to live in LA. And at a certain point, I was like, I don't want to live here anymore because I see the people who have the thing that I moved here for.
Yes.
And I can tell if I have what they have, I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah.
This is actually not what I want. So I need to go back to New York where I feel more grounded and connected to other human beings and actually just find my own happiness. And maybe I don't know what that looks like yet.
People forget to find their own happy. You get stuck in this bubble, especially in New York, because it's a fucking rat race and everyone's head is down. You just forget.
Yeah.
You know? And like,
you don't have time to think, am I happy?
Am I
happy? You're so fucking busy all the time.
Exactly. You have fucking deadlines.
Right.
You have to eat. Like, it's just, it's tough. But I think that's really, people forget to celebrate the little wins in life.
Totally.
And we take life way too seriously.
Yeah. Well, I think having a birthday is a win.
Yes.
As I always say about getting older, it beats the alternative.
Exactly.
So every day that you spend alive on this earth is a victory.
Motherfucking Dianu.
So happy birthday to you, Micey.
Thank you, cats.
All right. We have a great episode for you today. In studio with us is Karen Coleman. Karen is the director of programming and special projects at Nighthawk Cinema, which is two movie theaters right now that are in New York City. They're both in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Williamsburg as being Manhattan because
basically
it's the other part of Brooklyn for me.
It basically is, yeah.
Yeah, but one in Williamsburg and one that just opened in my hood in Park Slope. And Karen is also the founder of the Future of Film is Female project, which raises money to fund short films made by women filmmakers. And it's also now a screening series at the Museum of Modern Art. I attended one of those screenings, which is where I discovered Karen. And now she is here with us in studio to explain how to be a programmer who programs gender parity and also to try to convince me that it's a good idea to serve food in movie theaters. Karen, welcome to The Female Gaze. Thank you for coming in.
Hey, Karen. Thank you for having me.
We understand you've had quite a journey to get here.
Yes. Brooklyn to Manhattan.
Yeah.
Sucks. Sucks.
Yeah,
and so the G is trash.
So you have the fine privilege that not many New Yorkers have of working in the borough in which you live and within walking distance.
Yes.
So that is the dream.
Yes.
Your job in and of itself sounds like a dream to me. And your life is also a dream. So let us just bask in your dreaminess here.
I love this fictional story we're telling.
Yes, setting the bar high for you and your life. Okay. So before we get into all the things about what you do professionally, let's play a little game so we can learn what's on your mind these days.
Yeah.
And that game is called Float Your Boat.
Toot toot.
And be in your bonnet.
Buzz buzz. Bitch.
Oh, were you not going to say bitch today?
You gave me a look, so
you're
I was
editing
like,
yourself?
Bitch? Question mark.
Is this because you're about to have a birthday and you feel like you're growing up too much?
I feel like I need to stop cussing.
Buzz buzz bitch.
No, I'll always say bitch. Buzz buzz bitch.
Don't ever change.
Never change.
Never change. Okay, Alana, would you like to start us off this week?
Yeah. Okay,
what's your boat, baby?
My boat this week is this past weekend, I was asked to participate in a photo shoot that with an incredible photographer. Her name is Lex Barbario, and she has an exhibition that's opening in a gallery in Chelsea in June, and her vision is to she's doing it right now, take multiple photos of the same person as across the gender spectrum. Mm-hmm. So as a femme woman, as an androgynous individual, and then as a masculine person.
Were the genders of the models also across the spectrum?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to take a shot, like put a wig on. I felt like a porn star. I felt so unnatural with a wig, which is crazy.
How did this person find you, by the way?
Instagram.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Because Alana not only has a voice for radio, but a face for photo shoots. I hate you.
I do.
It's
not,
a rare combo.
No, that was it put me very much outside of my comfort zone. But it was awesome because I got to meet so many great people. And I also got to wear a beard, which was pretty cool. They had like actual special effects makeup. So I had a chunky ass beard and they gave
me
eyebrows.
Yeah, you sent me some shots.
Yeah.
It looked very realistic.
Yeah.
And I actually thought you looked great with a beard.
Thank you.
It was a good
look. I appreciate
that.
I felt like I was in love with meth. Like, that was the look that I was going for. But
yeah,
I'm going to post
it
today.
It was a little bit of a spotty beard.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not the healthiest body is growing
up. But a lot
of
the more, like, androgynous-looking women that were there looked amazing. My girlfriend looked like Jared Leto. I was like, I'm sorry, you're cool.
You I mean, she looks like that normally.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
But, like, what?
Does she have that great hair?
She did in the photo.
Because like,
I mean, she has amazing hair, but.
He has the best hair.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Wait, what
That's
hair
the
did they give?
Thing I could say.
Yeah, exactly. Great hair.
What hair did they give her to look like
a
Jared?
Dude?
Yeah.
So she had, you know, she has really long hair, but it's a mohawk, so she has the sides of her hair shaved. So they did like a pin. What's that? That curl? Like they gelled it, but it was like a pin
like the
curl.
Bump? Oh.
Yeah, it was like the old school. It looked like Johnny Depp in Crybaby.
Awesome.
And it was like slicked back so you couldn't see how long her hair was.
Okay.
It looked rad. It looked great. And then they gave her a mustache and I was like, okay, you're a hot man now.
Yeah. So what's the point of the photo shoot and where are these photos going?
So
like, what was the mission behind it?
I think for her it was just to like break gender stereotypes and show people that there's a range of you know, that there's a spectrum and that we all fit into that spectrum,
right.
You know, at one way
it
or
all
another.
Exists within
yeah,
us,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I will post the details about where it's going to be in June when I know.
Cool.
But she has a really sick, it's like going to be holographic too. So when you walk by it, you'll be able to see the face change.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah. And I don't want to speak for her because she knows everything about her project. So I'll post all of the information about it, but it was really awesome.
Okay.
And that's my boat.
Love it.
Toot toot.
Toot toot, baby.
Hell yeah.
Karen?
Well, my boat is not that exciting.
Let's hear it.
So I've been sick the past week, so my excitement has been relegated to like Twitter and things like that.
Yes.
But I got really nervous because like George Miller was sort of trending on Twitter and I was like, please don't let him be dead.
Right.
You know, it's like you see that and you're like, what's
moment.
Happened?
Yeah.
But it was basically just like Ava DuVernay and like some 2017 article of Steven Soderbergh talking about like in praise of Mad Max Fury Road, which is like, that's my thorn is that it was not, did not win the Oscar. But Steven Soderbergh basically being like, I don't know how they're not still shooting this movie and how hundreds of people aren't dead making this movie. And I
because he's so impressed.
Because he's so impressed. I mean, when you think about like George Miller is like a near 80-year-old man in the desert for years making this, you know, super feminist film with like Cirque du Soleil performers and not a lot of CGI. It's an incredible achievement.
Okay, so let me admit something.
Yeah.
I have never seen that movie because on its surface, it is the kind of movie that I would hate and that I never go to see. Mm-hmm. And I missed the boat. And then I felt like I should have seen it in the theater.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to do it justice to watch it on a small screen.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I really fucked up because it is supposedly a very feminist film.
Well,
it's
I wish
too late.
I wish we'd had this conversation 2 weeks ago because we
just
played
it
on 35mm.
missed my chance again.
Darn.
The life of missed chances.
I guarantee you will play it again.
Okay,
I like
we'll
to play
there.
It once a year.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Send me the invite, please.
I will.
Okay.
Don't miss it again.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good one. Mine. Okay. So I watch too much TV now, so I've been scraping the bottom of the barrel for new shit. So I started watching this random Australian show that's on Netflix now called Secret City. It's with Anna Torv. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but it's like it's a political thriller set in Australia, and she is a journalist who is uncovering political conspiracies between the Australian government and China. So it's a good thriller, but I discovered this really nice thing about it, which is that there is a very well-written trans character in the show, and the way that they treat it is amazing. So this person is actually the ex-husband of Anna Torv's character. When they were married, that character identified as a man, and then after they divorced, transitioned, and is now a woman. And they never really address that part of it. They kind of introduce this character with no commentary on them being trans, and then you understand that these two were married. But that is never presented as the reason why they divorced either. And they since have like become very close as friends. And this character, the trans woman, has other relationships, and it was just really magnificently handled in a show that feels kind of gender politically neutral. Otherwise, is not that kind of show.
Right.
But they just wrote this character into it, and it was awesome.
That's awesome. I feel like we were also just talking about this.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's
right.
Cool.
So now my radar is kind of on.
Exactly.
For like good trans representation.
Yeah.
And
I literally just thought about this the other day because I was watching Grey's Anatomy. I don't know if you guys watch Grey's Anatomy.
Like 15 years
well,
now. But
don't if you're emotional, because I cry every single episode.
That's what it's designed to
I
do.
I know. And I torture myself with it. But I was just thinking, and I totally didn't even think about this because he is so well written. He's not a main character. He's not anyone who like has a huge thing, but he is a trans doctor and he's a male. And I think they introduced in the beginning, but it was never anything that was like, oh, and that's the trans guy, or he just transitioned. He like casually brought it up because he was in the army or something. And he lives. That's his character. Yeah. Everyone's chilling. He interacts with people, but no one's ever like, oh, let's bring the trans doctor. Or, you know, it's a sob story about him. He's literally another doctor.
Totally.
And I didn't even think about that because he's just normal.
Yeah.
Like everyone else.
There is one really nice moment in the show. So spoiler, but nobody cares. So Anna Torv's character has sex with a man who was having sex with her ex. And says to this guy after they sleep together, oh, so you are into women because this guy was sleeping with her trans ex. And so she assumed that he must be into men, really, if he was having sex with a trans woman. Anyway, and he goes, well, Kim was a woman, like affirming, like, like being with a trans woman was because I was into women. Yeah.
Exactly.
It wasn't like a dude dressing up and I wanted to like fuck a dude. And it's like I'm attracted to women, trans women, cis women. Yeah.
Any woman.
It was a very subtle moment. It was like two lines of dialogue and then they moved on again with the rest
of
the
show. I feel like I need to watch this.
It was cool.
I see your brain ticking. I'm into it.
Yeah. Secret City. That's my boat.
Yeah.
All right. Bees. Lana.
Okay. So I read one article yesterday. I read an article on CNN and it pissed me off.
I'm very proud of you.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I know I'm reading articles. Jesse forces me to read because, you know.
It's hard to read articles on CNN, though.
It is.
They're like.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it's like.
That is the sound in my head.
There was an airline. This was from London. It's called, apparently, Thomas Cook Airlines is an airline that exists. Does anyone know about that? Well, it does.
Nope.
And hello, Thomas Cook exists. So basically, it was the airline had to apologize for this 21-year-old woman because they told her that she couldn't board the aircraft if she didn't cover up.
Cover up.
So herself. So apparently she was in a crop top and high-waisted jeans, which is like the look these days. And she was like, I had no problems in the airport because why? It's literally a crop top and high-waisted jeans. But as she was boarding, the flight attendants were like, sorry, if you don't cover up, we really can't bring you on. It's a disruption to the rest of the crew and the people on board. But like, what?
Where was this? What country is this?
London. It came from CNN London. I believe it was London. I might be misspeaking.
I guess I could see that being a British thing.
Yeah, but
Like, madam, we're very modest on this airline.
Hello. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You need to cover up. Sorry.
A lot of manners happening
too
there.
Too much midriff.
That's crazy.
Isn't that weird?
2019,
you're telling her to
Shocking.
Cover up. And she was like, that's honestly, weird. Like, I would kind of understand if I was like full lingerie.
Yeah.
But it was a crop top.
It's bizarre.
So that pissed me off.
Well,
so
I'm glad they apologized.
Well, they have to.
I know.
You know what I mean? They're not going to be like, no, we exactly public image. Yeah. So that pissed me off. But, you know. Buzz.
Yeah, weird. All right.
Can you do yours?
Okay.
I don't know what to say.
We might all be agreeing on what you're I think what you're going to, Aunt Becky.
I'm just going to.
Yeah.
Okay. I would like to talk about
Let's
this
talk
too.
About. Yeah. That's a
well,
big.
Well, okay.
Because otherwise I'm just going to start go Trump.
Yeah.
And then that's going to be.
Well,
sure.
We hate Trump.
So. Then perpetual will be.
It'll just be like a rabbit hole. Of
exactly.
That, so.
He's
like
fucking.
Okay. Yes.
Little orange bee.
So this story is my boat because I can't get enough, but my bee because the people that it involves are fucking bees of this earth. So the college acceptance, entrance, whatever application scam that was just uncovered, busted this week. So over 750 families were discovered to have cheated the system through bribery to get their kids into quote unquote prestigious colleges like USC,
Harvard,
Ivies. Mm-hmm. And two of the most famous families who were busted for this. I shouldn't even say families because apparently it was just the mothers.
Yeah.
So it was Lori Loughlin, otherwise known as Aunt Becky from Full House, and Felicity Huffman from Desperate Housewives.
Right.
And other things since then. I mean, Lori Loughlin paid what it was like $500,000. To get her daughters into USC.
I just don't understand because, first of all, why do you need that? Did Fuller House, the second season of Fuller House,
I guess, so just to finish explaining, so I guess primarily they did this through two ways. One was paying
SATs.
To have SAT scores fixed, and the other was like paying off people to say that these students were athletes and being accepted into the colleges so that they could play sports that they don't actually play.
Like that stuff's crazy. They just like Photoshop someone's face on an athlete's body.
Exactly. And that's the problem with like the rich getting richer and those who are actually like on the come up trying who had the potential to be athletes in an Ivy don't get those spots.
But to your point, the thing about this story to me is why? Is so crazy. Like you are so privileged. Your kids will be fine.
Exactly.
Is USC that hard to get into? Maybe it is.
Well,
they'll go somewhere else.
That's my question because they keep talking about USC and it's, you know, I guess I can understand like Yale or Harvard.
Right.
Or
yeah.
Like
but like
I
USC,
mean, usually people funnel their money in other ways like donations.
Yes.
Right.
Like but USC is like... USC.
Yeah. Apparently
not
a lot of like
program,
exactly.
You know?
Apparently a lot of Hollywood parents send their kids there. Yeah. So it might be like an image thing like, "Oh, sorry, Aunt Becky, your daughter didn't get in."
Right.
My Trojan. Friend was like, "Rich LA kids want to go to USC because they still want to be able to mostly live in their parents' gigantic house, but they want to like feel cool and also have a dorm where they can stop by, you know."
And the whole like cover up for this, you know, criminal enterprise that he was creating was a charity for disadvantaged youth.
Right.
So the quote donation.
So
I was like,
up.
"What?" What do you mean? It's the complete opposite. And then he exposed himself to get a smaller sentence. But like, bruh, you're still going to be in jail for a million years.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
There's two things that bug me about it.
Uh-huh.
And one is the fact that there's like 50 people who have been, you know, indicted already or and we're concentrating on like the two actresses.
Right.
And, you know, there's other people who are like head of like CEOs of corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Like those are the real scary people that I don't like who. Who are they that have this mentality that they can just manipulate the system?
Right.
That weirds me out. But then, you know, I have a 4-year-old son and all of this kind of stuff. Just I have no interest in it at all. Like people freak out about kindergarten and preschool. And it's like,
yeah, what
he just needs to go to school.
So you don't freak out about it?
I don't. I get freaked out because like so many parents talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like.
So are you of the mindset of. Like, wherever he goes, we'll be fine. The public schools are good enough.
Well, I'm lucky to be in a good public school district. Didn't know that I was when I moved there. I was like a happy accident. But, you know, I mean, I grew up in like South Florida.
Uh-huh.
It's not, you know, the mecca of intellectual engagement.
And educational standards.
Yeah. And I feel like... You know, I did fine. My parents stimulated me.
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely.
But yeah, I just feel like It's good to be a part of the community that you're in. Mm-hmm. And why are you stressing out about kindergarten?
It's kindergarten.
It's kindergarten. So that it weirds me out. And then I'm like, is this what I have to look forward to if I live in one of the major cities? Is I have to figure out like
I mean, yeah. I think people stress about kindergarten because you're working backwards, right? Yeah. It's like to get into this college, you have to go to this high school, to go to that high school, you know, and on and on and on back to like choosing your prenatal doctor. I don't know. So
I've been having like this huge dilemma with the colleges in general because it's like I went to Syracuse University, which is like I think $50,000 a semester. I had to take out mad loans, and
a semester or a year?
Or a year maybe. I just remember it being really expensive per semester. Mm-hmm. But and I was like super hyper focused on broadcast and digital journalism. I didn't fucking do anything with that. You know what I mean?
Your podcasting. I checked your degrees before.
But I feel like people focus so hard. Like your kid is going to be talented in whatever they were destined to be talented in.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what fucking school they go to.
No, I agree.
If they're good people with good skills that are doing something that they love, who gives a fuck about the fact where they went to USC? I don't know about you guys, but interviewing.
No, totally.
I've never had anybody say, "Oh, I mean, maybe with my graduate degree, but they just go, what'd you do? This is what I got it in." They're like, "Okay,
cool.
What have you done?"
Right. Exactly.
And this idea that like you're going to be 22, 23 years old getting out of a 4-year USC and you're going to have a career is like crazy.
Yeah.
And why don't these parents understand that? They do understand it. They've been through life. They went through college, so they should understand this isn't that fucking important.
Exactly. No.
Is this just a status thing? To say that
I think
kids
so.
Probably.
Go to those schools?
I think so. And also, I think it goes back to, like, you know, our fathers, fathers, mothers, mothers, who you have to go to college to get a job, period. And I think now the space is so diverse. I don't necessarily know if you need to go to college. And if you want to, like, does it have to be at 18 when you don't know what you're doing?
No.
Can we wait a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, it's experience, really.
I know. I wish I had a gap year.
Me too.
I'm very jealous of kids who did that.
Me too.
I actually went to college a year early. So instead I hated high school. Grew up
Fair.
In South Florida.
Uh-huh.
So I had an opportunity to go to community college my senior year.
Cool. Okay.
And so I was done with my undergraduate when I was like 21.
Damn.
And in no way ready.
Yeah.
For not. Like,
did you go to school for what you're doing now? Or
I mean, sort of. Mm-hmm. I got an
I don't even know what that would mean.
I got an no. I mean, I've never gone to film school, but it was an English degree.
Yeah,
so it was,
same.
You know, more in terms like writing, which is obviously something mm-hmm. that's a good foundation to have for
Absolutely.
Any sort of Anything. Creative endeavor. Secondary education. I am not a teacher, so there's that.
Right.
And
right.
then
but you're
art
a parent.
History. I'm teaching him to be a good person.
Yeah,
yes, that's my biggest job.
Yeah. A good ally.
Yeah, and then it was like 10 years before I went to graduate school, which was way more my speed and independent study, which I thrive in. I did horrible on my SATs and
Me
ACTs.
Me too.
Like, the standardized test is...
And that's why it's garbage, and that determines what gets you into a college. I'm not good at standardized tests.
Me either.
But I'm smart.
Yeah, and I had good grades.
Mm-hmm.
And then
but
it's like,
I would rather you cheat because you're a woman of color, and you would, if anyone needs help, you would have needed help to get into a college.
Like, get me off that island.
Fuck these rich white kids. They'll be fine.
I know. And here we are.
Okay.
So that was our B. We had a mutual. I guess
I like that B.
Yeah, that was a good B.
The B. I mean,
R.I.P. Aunt Becky.
I don't know. The funniest to me is like William H. Macy apparently sitting in the courtroom watching Felicity yesterday. It's just like it's so cinematic.
I know.
How did he not know?
I know.
That's,
well,
I don't
listen. Celebrity couples are often like businesses that run parallel to each other, and I don't know how involved they are in each other's lives.
It's true.
I mean, definitely can't understand like the moms being more involved in this stuff, but
I know
not to that extent.
It's crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall of the airport watching Aunt Becky be arrested.
Oh my god!
Was she arrested in the airport?
I think so. She was flying back from Canada. Actually, I don't know if the arrest
out in
happened.
Canada.
I know that she was flying back to LAX, preparing to be arrested. Her lawyer was trying to work it out so that he could have time with her before they made the arrests. And I don't have the update, guys. I'm sorry. Google it.
Google it.
Google it. It's just Schadenfreude, which is like a petty thing, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
It's like Paul Manafort and Aunt Becky.
Yeah.
Cool.
Come on.
Sharing a cell.
Exactly.
There's a TV series someone should write.
The New Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Karen, what's your B besides that?
That's the B.
Okay.
Yeah. What will be will be.
I try good one. Really hard not to get too worked up on negative stuff.
Okay, how's that working out for you?
I think it works out okay.
Okay.
I have periodic outbursts, but
that's, you know, probably healthy.
This is going to be like my Oprah statement of the day.
Yes,
but like a couple years ago, I guess like 2 years ago or last year, like Ava DuVernay had this article about like pivoting to positivity. Mm. And it sounds so silly, but I see so much of like the conversations being like complaining and, you know, especially around like women in film, mm-hmm. and just complaining to like the ether. Mm. And sometimes it's like, let's just focus that energy into just doing.
Yes.
While we are, you know, criticizing constructively. So I try and just go like, and then I like,
I would love that. Just do that.
Okay.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, well... Let's talk about then
you,
the things that you're putting into action, because you are not all talk. You are doing important shit. So first of all, let me say, well, you went to Nighthawk recently.
I did.
Correct?
I went to watch Greta a couple weeks
ago. Were you in Williamsburg or Prospect Park?
I was in Prospect Park.
Yes.
I love
the new location.
Yeah. It was amazing.
And I went last Sunday to see Buffy. The movie.
So you went to Prospect. Yeah, that was planned before Luke passed away. And I shouldn't say this.
Say it.
We have a wonderful communications manager who handles our socials, and his name's Conrad. He was doing the research on Buffy, and it turns out like Christy Swanson's like a crazy MAGA head.
No way.
Yes.
Oh, and I don't tell me.
Damn!
I'm sorry,
wait,
you already saw.
Lost another.
Yes, and I was like, what? Because we have this whole series, kind of stemming around Captain Marvel about like women, like action comic book and sci-fi heroes.
Yes.
So that's our March programming. And I was like, well, this is bad. And then when Luke Perry died, I'm like, oh, then people won't be too mad then.
Yeah, there you go.
That's sad.
Else
that's me.
Yeah. I mean, what was crazy? So. I was the most obsessed Luke Perry fan in the entire universe when I was a kid, which is why Buffy was so important to me. I watched it a million times. It's also why I refused to ever watch the TV show version of
You've
Buffy.
You've never watched the TV show?
No, because Luke was not in it. And so I boycotted it from the very beginning. Now I just feel like it's too late. But what I took away from seeing the movie this past weekend was, I totally forgot. It feels like a very feminist film.
Yes.
And she's very good in it.
Yes.
And the evolution of her character in that movie is all about going from being this cookie cutter, vapid Southern California girl to like getting in touch with her true self, which is like a down and dirty ass kicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that Luke Perry has that amazing line to her where he's like, you're the guy, Buffy, or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like you're not waiting for a savior. You are the savior.
Yeah.
You're the guy.
Yeah.
And it was like, fuck, this movie is great. You
it
know?
Is best death scene by Paul Rubens.
Paul Rubens, yes.
Ever.
Yes.
In a film.
He milks it for like 5 minutes. So great.
I'm glad you've both been to Nighthawk.
But wait, so Buffy is part of a series that you're doing now,
yes,
right? So please explain to me the other movies in the series and how you chose Buffy to be part of it.
Sure. So Buffy is we're playing in Williamsburg next weekend.
Okay.
And we started doing rep and special programmings at Prospect Park a bit earlier than we thought. So we're trying to like integrate sort of some of the stuff we're doing in Williamsburg and Prospect Park and back and forth, because we're obviously not showing Captain Marvel in Williamsburg. So we were like, Buffy's great. It's directed by a woman, you know, and then Luke Perry passed away. And so we were like, well, this is a good little did you see the
tribute.
Little like RIP slide?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fine. I cried. I wore my Luke Perry nightgown to the screening
yes,
that I bought
did.
When I was 9 years old.
So it's a crop top.
I love.
Yeah. Well, also,
did you get kicked out?
Exactly. Sorry.
At some point, I cut it so it would be a t-shirt, and now it's like super short. It's fine.
Perfect.
Anyway, and I cried at the end of I cried a lot. So thank you again for screening it. Okay, go on.
You can see it again. Yeah. I'll get you tickets.
I might.
So this series, one of my colleagues, Chris King, a man, a white man.
Oh.
Yes.
Controversial.
I work with a lot of them. He's been wanting to do a series like this. And so we worked together on it, kind of working out any sort of problems that we, you know, like could have and trying to narrow it down because, you know, you can talk about women action heroes across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So like, how do we want to be this, have it be more focused around the Captain Marvel theme in an area where there's not a lot of strong women characters that we want to have included in that. So we started off with Foxy Brown, which is sort of like not related, but it's Pam Grier.
Yeah,
right.
We showed Mad Max Fury Road. We are showing this now. This is when I blank on like everything.
Wait, I thought for some reason one of the films in the series was Cleo from 5 to 7.
That is a new series that we're doing at Nighthawk Prospect Park called like Historic. So that's part of our general like Women's Month there.
Got it.
Which is such a weird thing for me to say because I program films directed by women all the time.
Right.
But it's exciting because we have a little bit of a different audience there. So we can show classic films and there's like a fan base and like a desire.
By different,
for that.
Do you mean older?
Yeah. There's an older crowd. I think they're looking for like older classic films. And I think that people in general there are also looking for like a bit more of the art house edge to it.
Yeah.
So for that, yeah, we're showing that there and then Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then myself and Sam Zimmerman, who's a curator at Shudder, we do a lot of midnight horror programming together.
Okay.
And like we often find ourselves sitting at a bar at like 1 a.m. like, why are we here? Why do we do midnight programming? Like we're old enough now. Of course, he's like 30, so he's not that old. But like we should be doing these at like 8 o'clock. Yeah. So we came up with this idea for midnight movies at a reasonable hour.
Okay. Nice. I can't do a midnight screening. I will fall the fuck asleep
every time. I mean, I used to do them, and then now I'm like, what? Yeah. I can't. We need to be civilized.
Yes.
So we started that last month with Candyman.
Oh.
And I'm super excited for Nia DaCosta's remake. She's the director of Littlewoods that's coming out next month with Tessa Thompson. So amazing. And I just kind of love the old Candyman. It's problematic, but it's also like not problematic.
Yeah.
It's very complicated.
What isn't problematic?
He's very sexy.
Okay. There's a hot take.
Yeah. And then we're doing for this month, I can't believe it's still March, we're doing a Bloodbath, which was a Roger Corman produced film that's directed by Stephanie Rothman and Jack Hill. So it's vampires.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love cool. that.
So Prospect Park, you know, we're also showing Cat Video Fest. So it's kind of, we're just like trying to hit all the base there. And Williamsburg is a little bit more, you know.
Because the sound of hipsters coming to the theater.
I love that. You are queen of sound effects.
That was great.
I love that.
I'm trying not to just nod. Like,
It is a podcast.
That's true.
I know, sound of my hands instead of gestures.
Yeah. sound of hipsters.
Karen, how does one become a film programmer? How the hell did you fall into this?
I don't
because it sounds like an awesome job.
I don't know.
Okay.
So my background.
How can I do it? No. How did you do it?
My background's in contemporary art.
Okay.
So when I graduated from college and didn't know what I was doing, I moved to Chicago and I started working at the MCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art there.
Wow.
And in the front desk. It wasn't very exciting.
Wow.
Foot in the door, though.
But it was cool because, you know, one of the women that I sat at the front desk with, she was a curator there for like 20 years and now is the director of a college museum. So I opened up my own project space there. So eventually moved to LA, did the gallery stuff there. And while I was in Los Angeles, obviously that's a place where movies are a huge part of everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't have television for like 5 years. So I would just watch movies. I would go to this great video store and like get like 2 or 3 movies and just watch them and watch them and watch them. And I've loved horror films for so long. And eventually I was like, I just don't want my conversations about art to be like, where did this artist go to school? Mm-hmm. Whose collections are they in? And it's about money, and everything was such a fast turnaround. And I loved working with artists. So anyway, I went to grad school in London. I went to Goldsmiths and did a 2-year MFA curatorial program.
Wow.
And like I said before, it was structured very independently. And I just immediately started thinking about like moving images, the relationship between art and film, horror and art. And it just sort of kind of came to be of more of my interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we moved to New York. My husband got a job here, and we're like, hey, they're going to pay for us to move here. I can't imagine any other way to be in New York as an adult.
Totally.
I'm like, I don't want to.
Without opening 10
Because I never wanted to live in New York. So I was just like, all right, well, let's do this.
Yeah.
And I met our former beverage manager at Union Pool one night. And Jed Marshall, do you know her? Everybody seems to know her.
I feel very uncool now.
My God.
We have to meet her.
We're going to Union Pool tonight.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, I know Jed Marshall. It's like a running joke.
Fuck.
This is everyone says about Alana Rodriguez.
Yeah, right.
This sounds so boring. She was like, oh, so how long have you lived here? I'm like, a couple months. I'm looking for the new like BFI, the British Film Institute, where I spent many hours when I lived in London. She's like, oh, well, I work at this movie theater, Nighthawk. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I was like, how did I not know about this? She's like, we've been open for 3 weeks.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, oh. So like the next week I went there and I met Matthew Vera, who's the owner, and John Woods, who's now my colleague. And I was like, I want to do like this artist film series in the lobby. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we first opened, it wasn't super crowded. So we like set up chairs in the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
what does that mean? An artist like, film series?
So basically artists who are making like short artist films.
Oh,
so
and you would screen them in the lobby?
Yes. So I'd have like a little art opening screening.
That's
like
awesome.
There. And then I actually served there for a while because I wanted to work on like my own projects. I didn't want to have a real job. And
were you good at the really low bending running thing?
I would say I got very fit.
Okay.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, it's like because you're up and down, uh-huh. and you're going up the stairs, down the stairs. I'm not a very good waitress.
Okay.
I think I did okay, but I think.
Sorry, if anyone's confused. So.
Oh yes.
Nighthawk is one of those places where you can order full meals while you're watching your movie, and the servers will run them to you, and they try to be low to the ground so they're not blocking the screen too much.
Absolutely. And we actually changed the law in 2011 so you could have alcohol served in the theater.
I drank a lot of beer during Greta. And we played a sick game with our server where instead of writing our order, we did Pictionary.
Oh, no.
So he probably hated. But I would just draw like a gold, like, because I love Golden Monkey sour beer. And so I would just draw like a gold bar and a monkey, and he was like, what's up? And we knew. So I loved that.
Well,
you hate that.
That aggravates me because my concern with these kinds of theaters is that that can be a distraction if you're really into watching the movie. I mean, there are certain movies I'll go to or if someone is like unwrapping a candy from 10 rows away, I will want to walk out because they are distracting me and I am taking that movie very seriously. So it has to be a certain kind of movie for me to tolerate the food and the serving and the thing. A lot of people don't give a shit, so I get it.
Well,
but if you're like playing games with your server to make them stand there longer, I will destroy
no,
you.
No, they don't stand and wait. You write it and then you put it up on the little tab.
You're trying to read your hieroglyphics.
Listen, first of all, I'm an excellent artiste, but what I will say is I do get really aggravated by the candy stuff and the thing and the thing. But this, I didn't notice when the servers were going, and maybe I was so into the
movie.
He was incredible. I wish I knew his name because I would shout him out.
Oh, I love to hear that because, you know, we're in Prospect Park. It's new and we have a lot of people there who have not done this before.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'd like to imagine when people complain or get upset, it's like, imagine you have 100 people at a restaurant who all sit down at the same time.
Exactly.
And all leave at the same
exactly.
time. Like there's that is, and you can't talk to them for the most part.
Sure.
It's tricky, but
no, it's silent serving for 100 people at the same time.
Karen, you're here, so
I'm here.
You're a face for me to vent to for a second.
Do
so,
it. Do it.
So, I mean, I understand that it's a fun thing for people to be able to go see Buffy and also yes. eat a three-course brunch. I did feel like I was living inside of a ketchup bottle because it smelled a lot like ketchup next to me, and that
really?
Was a little bit distracting for me. And it says on the screen before the movie starts, please let your server know if there's a disturbance. And my friend whispered to me, what if your server is the disturbance? Like, it's a bit of a conundrum.
I know.
Depending on your taste for what kind of environment you like to watch.
I totally.
I get it. We have
gotten it out. Moving on.
Thank you for sharing at the table. Kumbaya.
I will say that some servers are more ninja-like than others.
Totally.
My server was a fucking rock star.
Yeah.
He was ninja. Yeah.
And sometimes we hire like 7 feet tall people. I'm like, why did we do that?
No. No.
Yeah.
But I think you should employ children. I think there should be a two-foot maximum.
Tiny children.
That's kind of our plan because like a lot of us have kids like within the 2 to 5
like,
year old range.
I'm not worried about where I'm sending my son to school because he's going to work for me.
Let him loose.
He does not need to go to USC. He already has a job at Nighthawk.
Nepotism within Nighthawk.
Exactly.
But it does give me a good sort of foundation because, you know, we're a cinema that also has a kitchen, a front of house, and beverage.
Yes.
Right. So I have like a nice knowledge base of how things run there.
Yeah.
It's
okay,
not like going to a regular movie theater where it's just on there. You know, I have to make sure that, you know, Q&As are not disrupted and things like that.
Right. So when did they decide to give this crazy feminist with an art background the keys to the programming castle?
Slowly but surely. Okay. I started out in the office like as a coordinator like 2 days a week and then 3 days a week and then 4 days a week.
Oh,
and then now it's like, and then it was like 7 days a week. And you know, I mean,
and now you own Nighthawk.
They were like, can you go home and shower at least? This is a little much.
Yeah. Our offices used to be in the apartments above Williamsburg.
Oh, really?
So we actually did have a shower.
Oh my God.
That's like, it's not a movie.
And now we have real offices. We've grown a lot, you know?
Congrats.
Yeah. We have a real office.
Legit business.
So cool.
Phone booths and everything.
Yeah. Ooh, fancy. Yeah.
And then how early into your tenure doing what you do now were you like, I have an agenda and it's to push women and to deal with it?
Well, it happened sort of organically. In 2013, mm-hmm. I had this idea to do a short film festival. It's like, why not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can do this.
Yeah.
And I will say, you know, my boss, Matthew, is, it's like, just do it. You know, and especially in the beginning, we were given a lot of opportunity to just experiment and sort of test the boundaries of what we can do and we have. And I would say, you know, the relationships I've developed through the Nighthawk Shorts Festival have been amazing. I mean, I think there's been one person out of like 7 years where I'm like, ugh. Like, and this is like hundreds of people. And a lot of those relationships have been with female directors and producers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we opened the 2016 Nighthawk Shorts Festival the day after Trump won the election.
Wow.
And that was obviously a shift for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've had to do introductions to films before when something bad has happened. And you just kind of, the show must go on.
Of course.
But the show, I had to address it. Mm-hmm. And I realized from that point forward that what we had to do was this festival had to be inclusive. And, you know, I was thinking about what is my job as a programmer? I don't make art, but I have the ability to provide access to it.
Yeah.
And from that, you know, we've almost always had gender parity in the shorts festival, especially in our midnight programming that I do with Sam Zimmerman. I mean, basically, like anything he sees at a festival is directed by a woman, which is, I joke that he's a bigger feminist than I am.
Yeah. So you guys are seeking out that parity.
I mean, it now it's like a commitment.
Okay.
Yeah.
But before it was just happening.
Yeah.
You know, what we were interested in and like the vibe that we were sort of putting out and, you know, who was submitting work to Nighthawk. But after that, I was like, we really have to make a conscious effort that people's stories are going to be heard.
Yeah.
And, you know, that whole week was a daze. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I really dealt with the election until I was like sitting in my house on my day off, like, what the fuck is this?
But like most trauma, takes a little time to process it.
But it was really a community building experience. You know, filmmakers were like, I came to this and I didn't know, and now I feel better. Mm-hmm. Like watching these films and talking to people and just feeling like we can do something was really important. And so
that gave you some renewed purpose too in your job? Yeah.
Yes. And you know, but at the same time, in 2013, we programmed a women director's film series called She Made It, and no one gave a shit. Mm-hmm.
Like
no
the press
one.
Or
press didn't care.
People didn't come. Yeah.
People came, you know, but it wasn't. Yeah. You know, now someone would get like a trophy and a gold star.
Exactly.
You know, like I also in early 2014, we worked with the Film Foundation to show Barbara Loden's Wanda on a restored print that they had.
Cool.
That was in 2014. Yeah. And then like last year, everyone's like, you know, Barbara Loden. And then I'm like, we did it.
Yeah.
You know,
been
we
there.
Were doing it. And, you know, I'm happy that she's getting that. But it's been something that we've kind of always done there. Like, okay. I've done a Karen Black series. Like, we have really, it just seems to be the case. But now it's like, this is no joke. You really have to pay attention to what we're showing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do work with a lot of white men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their perspective is not malicious. It's just their perspective.
Yeah. Totally.
And, you know, I'm a white woman. So it's like, okay, how can we bring in other people? And it's growing.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is that the audience is there for it.
Right.
Especially now.
Right.
And so that's really important. And I like working with new independent films. And the diversity is there.
Yeah.
Just because of what that is in short films and then like first time features. It's,
sure.
It's there. And that's exciting.
Right. What would you say are some of the big challenges, though, for programming female filmmakers? Like, I would assume just, for example, it's, well, maybe it's not. Maybe you're saying it's not, but I would assume it's harder to find, just in general, films that are directed by women, because there's still
I mean, in the
huge imbalance.
In the bigger level, like on the bigger theatrical runs right. that we do, so for anyone who's unfamiliar, we show, like, first run theatrical, like mm-hmm. Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. Avengers. Well, now we do it at Prospect Park, but we're showing Greta, which I would love to hear what you think about that.
We talked about it on yeah, the last okay. episode.
I want to know your thoughts too, but continue.
So it can be difficult to get a film at that level that warrants like a full run,
mm-hmm.
just because, I mean, this is the problem. Women aren't being given films with bigger budgets that have bigger distributors releases. That said, we showed Karin Kusama's Destroyer for a really long time. We did really, really well with it. I'm hoping that we'll get Little Woods. I mean, we're showing Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. You know, these things are happening. We showed Free Solo, you know, co-directed by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But for me in general, it's really just having the space. And
yeah.
now that we have like another theater that has 7 screens, it gives a little bit more space for me to actually have a screen
mm-hmm.
to show the works, because I'll try and integrate it as much as I can into mm-hmm. our weekend early matinees,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not hard.
Okay.
And it's almost like that thing when you put out the energy, it
sure.
comes back to you.
Right. Well, what's your primary means of discovery, would you say? Like, are people sending you films? Are you going to festivals?
Festivals. I mean, I go to obviously I go to Tribeca because
uh-huh.
it's right here.
Right.
but I'd love to go to TIFF in Toronto because
oh, yeah.
mm-hmm. they have a really good international independent program, and they have a lot of really weird, great films that I don't think you'd ever. Sometimes they don't even get releases.
Yeah,
and I really do love them, and so I kind of seek out like those kind of films directed by women,
okay.
And weird international horror films. But it's just kind of like, have you seen this?
Yeah.
Or I've developed relationship with distributors that they'll send me screeners
mm-hmm.
or check this out. Or I mean, there's a lot. I mean,
yeah.
I have like a file section in my email. It's like screeners, and it's just so much.
Yeah.
There's like almost too much to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I try and do like our staff screenings at Nighthawk, or, you know, it's just trying to watch as much as I can. But it's a combination of the relationships I've developed and then just me asking,
yeah.
you know, what should I
right.
say?
So is that how you develop the themes? Because, you know, you're getting so much content coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Is that then when you say, okay, so then let's frame this particular series around X, or do you have the theme and then you seek it? How does
sometimes,
that process
work? Well, when we do like a rep programming, when we do a rep programming like midnights or brunches,
mm-hmm.
generally we do like to think of like what is, I mean, this is my curatorial background of
yeah.
like, what are the films, what are they saying to each other, and let's present them together. Some people work differently, but that's kind of how I like to frame it.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, like the Women in Action, the hero series, did start out with a big list of like, here are all the women hero in action movies. And then it's like, okay, but where are the ones that we can pull out that actually makes sense as a cohesive program.
Right.
So there's really no, like, you know, then curatorials, like, grad school, they're like, you can't be like, I'm gonna do a cat show and then you like pick all the artists that have cats, like, we don't do that. But you know, a lot of that is my other programmers, John Woods and Chris King, and then I kind of do a lot of one-offs or like weekend screenings of like newer films. But with the Shorts Festival, there is no theme. We just like the shorts to have conversations with each other.
Do you feel like it's a healthy industry that you're in right now? Like, working for the kind of theater that you work for? Because I think about, like, you know, if you work for AMC, first of all, I would hate you. I would be like, why do you only program garbage Marvel movies that I don't want to see? And whatever. But, you know, it, like, people are still clearly coming out to your theaters. I guess you probably have the kind of audience that still appreciates the value of seeing things on the big screen.
Yeah.
As opposed to streaming everything.
Yeah.
But do you worry about that? Do you worry, like, do you feel like you're bleeding a little bit to streaming audiences, or
no,
it's a healthy?
I personally feel like it's healthy.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm on a lot of, like, art, I'm sorry, it's Art House, but, you know, film digests and email lists. And, you know, I can definitely see the older generation is freaking out. And I get concerned that we're like in the music industry in the 90s where people don't know what
Napster
to do with it.
Right.
But I really feel like there is a symbiotic relationship to it. I mean, theaters like AMC might have to worry about it. But I don't think places in New York or in other, I mean, there's nothing like seeing a movie. I mean, I've seen movies hundreds of times, and then I see the movie there, I'm like, I never noticed that.
Yeah.
I never noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that community experience, I think we're lucky at Nighthawk because we have built up a reputation for many different kinds of audiences to come and have this experience. And we pride ourselves that everything looks good, it sounds good, it's masked, you know, it's presented in the best way possible. But, you know, I sometimes can't get to a movie theater, and ironically I actually watch a lot of new films on my laptop because that's the only way I can watch a screener with my name plastered in the middle of it. You know, that's not ideal. But you know, I think places like Netflix are changing a little bit. You know, I don't sort of agree with this Steven Spielberg sort of model of they should only be at the Golden Globes or the Emmys or whatever that is, you know, from a person who has had like every opportunity. You know, I mean, Roma is an amazing film. It was released in 70 millimeter. We're playing it. But it's also was fine on my 60 inch television too.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I just think it is what it is.
Yes.
I mean, you can't fight these things that are not going away.
No.
Yeah.
And at least streaming has become this amazing method of discovery for a lot of people.
Yes.
Then if you discover a filmmaker you love by watching Netflix or whatever, and then you see one of their films is playing at a theater, then you can go see it at a theater and enjoy that experience that way. I mean, I will say, like, for people who are listening who don't really go to movie theaters anymore, A, hopefully you live in a city where there are good independent theaters that are screening films like Nighthawk does, and B, the experience of going somewhere where you are not allowed to be on your phone and you cannot be on Twitter while you're watching the movie or be on Instagram while you're watching the movie, you will have a different experience watching that film than you can have at home, because we do not give undivided attention to anything anymore.
And
movie theaters are one of the only places left where we do that.
Absolutely.
It's a true escape.
Yeah,
completely
exactly.
Agree.
I mean, we like to say, you know, it's nice to have a beer at your house, but sometimes it's nice to go to a bar and have a beer.
Right,
you know?
Right, exactly.
It's even nicer to sit with the beer and watch a movie.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
I agree. Hello.
I Karen, I need to confront you about something else that I read that you said.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Oh, shit.
Is it about Vanderpump Rules?
Nope.
I hope so.
It's about E.T. And you
Speaking of trauma,
I will say that the first cinema experience I remember is walking to the car after seeing E.T. and saying to my mother, I will never see that movie again. And I didn't for over 30 years. So what was your problem with E.T., one of the best movies of all time? And what did you think when you rewatched it?
First of all, I like to think of myself as a little critic. Like,
I love that.
I had some problems with this. No, it was so, I was so sad. I must have been like six or something, but I was with my grandma and my mom, and I was just like, fuck this.
Yeah, that's the first movie I ever
really
cried at.
Yeah,
it really made me sad.
Yeah, it'll fuck you up.
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't think it was a bad movie?
No.
Just,
oh, God,
had
no.
A hard time.
I had a hard time with it. It really made me feel things. And I guess I watched it on a snow day like 2 or so years ago. My husband put it on for my kid, and I was like working, and I was like, you can't do this.
Don't do it.
And I was still like,
yeah.
Yeah, it really.
It holds up?
It holds up. And you notice things when you're older, like, you know, the scientist who's trying to save him is actually like, all, you know, I didn't pick up on that nuance when I was a kid that he's dreamed of seeing an alien his whole life.
Yeah.
And you know, that there's like that element to it. But you're just like, Elliot's so cute and he's so sweet. And yeah.
I would argue that Spielberg, in some of his films at least, has a bit of the female gaze about him. That he is a very, or can be a very emotional, intuitive director, especially when he's telling stories about kids.
Yes.
And their mothers, which was a very important kind of relationship for him.
Yes.
Yeah. So despite his stupid comments about Netflix and the Oscars and whatever, I'm still pro Spielberg.
But
I'm
then
Spielberg.
Also, the don't you think that maybe that like nurturing, intuitive nature is just him being a like parent?
You mean it's not female, it's parental?
Yeah.
Do we want to fall down this rabbit hole?
I mean, I don't know. It was just the first thing that popped in my head because, I feel like maybe we do men a little bit of a disservice there when they have these emotions.
Alana loves to be.
I like to be
in the men's camp.
No, not always. I'm just a firm believer that we can't preach to each other. We have to educate and preach outward and also be inclusive because we preach inclusivity. I'm just playing devil's advocate, you know me.
So we've discussed on this podcast that there are some inherent qualities to what we would call the female gaze.
Yes.
And again, these labels are just labels, and it's just the way that we have of talking about things. So we can argue, I think, about what use it is to call something the female gaze.
Yeah, totally.
But we're talking about a particular kind of gaze that has these qualities.
Yeah.
And I think Spielberg has them.
Yeah.
Are they inherently female? I mean, we've also talked about how all genders have all things in them, right?
Yeah.
So, and that men can use the female gaze, and then there are things that we would say are more masculine that women also have. Again, it's all labels.
Yeah.
So,
true.
I don't know.
So,
does that answer your question?
Yes.
It's ongoing.
So, we're always
ongoing.
In this hole.
Yeah.
Always are in our hole.
Karen, what's on your radar that listeners can look out for like this spring? Are there some exciting films coming out, women filmmakers who are working on stuff we should be watching for? Give us the insider's tip.
Oh, the insider's
tip. Yeah, you're here for the inside talk.
The scoop, if you will.
Exactly.
All right. Well,
it could be something that's happening at Nighthawk or just in general on your radar.
Well, Nia DaCosta's Little Woods with Tessa Thompson, that opens in the middle of April.
Okay.
That Neon is releasing that.
What's that film about?
That film is about two sisters in a small fracking town who, again, like, you know, Tessa Thompson is, her sister's white and they don't make a lot of, she's adopted and their mom dies. And it's really about people in this poor community trying to deal with drug addiction and access to healthcare and going over to Canada. And she's a woman who has been in trouble for kind of burying drugs,
you
know, pills that she gets because her mother was sick. And she's trying to keep on the straight and narrow, but things happen. And, It's just so wonderful, and it's a really nice snapshot of like rural America and kind of what those struggles are. I just think it's brilliant. I think Nia's amazing. She's also rewriting Sleeping with the Enemy.
Oh, that's right. I'm guessing that movie doesn't hold up, although I did love it when I was a kid.
I mean, it is so problematic, but it's so good, too. You know?
I mean, classic Julia.
It's so good. Her hair is so amazing in it.
Always.
But I mean, the fact that she like goes to a small town and then like some guy's like all creeping up on her, it's like, just give her some space.
Right.
Right, right, right.
give her some space. Damn.
Also in April is Emma Tammy's The Wind, which is like a horror noir western.
Okay.
And it's about a frontier couple. It's period based. Who live are like with the first people kind of near their land. They've had a loss, and this new couple comes next door, and it's a really interesting story about what to see like what you're watching is actually happening or if it's not happening.
Cool.
But it's super, I mean, it has those great kind of like panoramic Western shots. The landscape's beautiful. It's very quiet. There's some creepy moments. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Nice.
Rafiki.
I was just going to ask about Rafiki.
Rafiki. It's so good.
I'm very excited to see it. Are you guys playing it?
We're not. I'm pushing for it, okay. But BAM is playing it. I will promote BAM.
I didn't want to tell you, but I did just buy tickets to the BAM screening.
Go. It's really, really wonderful.
So Rafiki is a queer love story set in Kenya, correct?
Yeah.
And it's the movie that was banned?
Yes.
From being played in Kenya?
Yes.
Okay.
Crazy.
But
yes.
It's going to be here.
I lived in Kenya.
Oh.
Nairobi.
Did you have a queer love story?
I did not. I was, I was 7.
Queer
zero to 7 years old.
Okay.
But yes, love.
Rafiki.
Kenya.
That's amazing.
Rafiki.
And then Jennifer Kent's The Nightingale. She's the director of The Babadook. That comes out this summer.
Oh my God, The Babadook.
I watched The Babadook.
The shit out of
terrifying.
Me.
I love horror, but I'm terrified. Like, I love to watch it, but I will not be able to sleep for weeks following, but I keep doing it to myself.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you're a mom and you have a son.
Yes.
I'm like,
oh, right.
Yeah. Don't see things.
Yeah.
Don't tell me about it.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, great. Those are some hot tips.
Those would be my hot tips. I would also, you know, if you're into Mary Harron, who directed I Shot Andy Warhol in American Psycho, she has a new film about it's really not about Charles Manson. It's about the women he manipulated.
Mm.
And it flashes back to how they got involved with him in the murders and then in jail. So it's kind of like a three-part
piece.
Wait,
what's this called?
It's called Charlie Says.
Charlie Says. Okay.
That's right. That's screening at Tribeca, and that comes out in May.
Okay. Cool. Awesome.
And we may be having that at night. I'm trying to fit it in.
Fingers
Stay
crossed.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Sometimes I have a weird thing with like Charles Manson stuff, but it's well done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, before we let you go, will you do a quick round of the hot takes wheel with us? We're gonna.
Yes.
You
get
don't know
ready
what it
for
is,
the hot
but I want
takes
you to
wheel.
Agree anyway.
So basically, what our hot takes wheel is, it's this beautiful wheel. It has a bunch of topics that are crowdsourced or either from, you know, our brains. And you're going to spin it, and whatever it falls on, we're just going to have a little quick chat on it, our thoughts.
Oh my God.
I know.
Spin it hard.
I have a lot to say about Michael Jackson, so maybe hopefully we'll be on that. Oh.
Can you read it?
It says, is prostitute still okay or just sex worker? So mean the term?
The term.
Mm.
Yeah. Does anyone have a strong opinion or insight on this one?
Is prostitute a bad word now?
That's what the question is.
Well, yeah, I don't know because I would still say prostitute. I don't know. You know what I think? And I don't know. Okay, I have no idea. But like, for instance, there's a whole community on Instagram of sex workers that are open sex workers. They discuss it. It's very, it's a huge community. I follow a lot of them for no other reason than I like the clothes that they wear. But also they have very interesting stories. Yeah. And they refer to themselves as sex workers. I don't think they would ever refer to themselves as prostitutes. So is that exactly so there? But then what about the sex workers who are on the streets who don't know the term maybe yet or don't have access to a social media community? I don't know. Like, do they still consider? I don't know. Like, is in the street community prostitute or
that's
street worker? Is it social sex worker just to be like socially friendly?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I think we need someone from that community or from that profession to weigh in.
Yes.
So if you listen and you have insight into that firsthand, please let us know.
Yeah.
Because
I'm going to slide in some DMs, maybe.
Ask.
For sure. I think that would be really interesting.
Okay. I mean, I guess the existence of the phrase sex worker has made me think that it's replacing prostitute.
Mm.
And it sounds less derogatory.
Yeah.
Prostitute
yeah.
has become derogatory. Yeah. We use it as a slur sometimes.
That's what I was thinking.
Right. Yeah.
But I wonder if sex worker is someone who's more like engage themselves personally with
right.
the work rather than someone who has somehow found themselves in a position to where they're doing something they don't want to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Like maybe sex worker is more of an empowering, like for lack of a better term, this is my vocation.
Yeah.
This is what I do.
Right.
This is my career versus, you know,
a side hustle.
Like maybe you just had like, no other means to an end, and that's what
got it.
Where you were.
By the way, I just saw Clute for the first time. I also screamed at BAM. Oh my God. Jane Fonda won Best Actress for this movie around 1970, early 70s, and Donald Sutherland is in it, but she plays a
You're having a Donald Sutherland time.
Yes, because he's also in Buffy.
Yeah.
He was young and cute in Clue, which I had never seen him be before.
Yes. Young and cute.
Young and cute.
I love him.
Donald.
What was I going to say? The HBO documentary on Jane Fonda is pretty amazing in five
Loved
acts.
Uh-huh. Yeah. In a way that I thought would annoy me because it's all kind of structured around her relationships with men.
Yes.
But those did represent very distinct chapters in her life. And kind of self-admittedly, she chameleoned herself around these men through a lot of her life. And it's taken her a long time to kind of find herself independent of the man that she was with, which talks about it. It was fascinating. Yeah.
I had a wonderful year once where I saw her twice.
Ooh.
And...
like just like out in the street?
Yeah. No.
Out in the wild?
No.
Actually, I went to a White House correspondence dinner.
Okay.
And she was there and she was like in all sequence. She was so amazing. My heart stopped. And then I saw her at the Tribeca Film Festival that year too at the opening night. And I was just like,
hello, I love you.
I mean, my God.
Yeah.
She's kind of everything.
Yeah. She is everything. And Jane Fonda in Barefoot in the Park is like the cutest, most wonderful person in the world. And she remains so.
I even like her in Monster-in-Law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She can do no wrong. Spectrum.
She can
do no wrong. A little less cute, but definitely badass.
Yeah, for sure. You just did a thing with your headphone and your hair came
is
up.
My hair
you have
crazy?
Like an alfalfa thing. No, I'm into it. Keep it. You have to keep it
you
forever
have now.
You have the
swoop.
You have the swoop. Yeah. Are you Johnny Depp?
Yeah,
baby,
it's me. Okay, Karen, where can people follow you, find you?
Give us the socials.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Well, on Twitter, I guess I should say my name is spelled weird. So
yes,
it's
fixing my hair.
CARYN_COLEMAN. That's me on Twitter. On Instagram, my Instagram's private because it's pictures of my kids. But you can go to Future of Film is Female. And that's
which, by the way, is on your sweater right now.
Yes,
she has an incredible sweater. It says "The Future of Film is Female."
And we didn't even talk about that, by the way.
I have shirts for you guys too.
Amazing.
Oh, yes.
But quickly tell people about that, because that's actually how I discovered you. As I went to a film that you curated as part of that.
Which one did you go to?
I went to Clara's Ghost.
Okay. So Future Film is Female sprung out of the Shorts Festival. Mm-hmm. Like in 2017, I was like, oh, I'm going to make these shirts that are like the 70s, the future is female. Sick. To wear during the festival. And then, of course, I was running a film festival, so I didn't even have time to do that. So after the dust kind of settled from that, I did a campaign where all the proceeds from the t-shirt sales would benefit female filmmakers making a short film at any stage of production. So it can be pre-production, so research, paying your craft services, or post. And so in the past year, we've been able to fund 5 films. And I'm in the process now of figuring out the next round of funding. And we've partnered with Heard City. They're a post-production sound mixing company. And they work with me on the Shorts Festival. But so much of the work that needs to get done in short films is post-work, post-color, and post-sound. So they're offering their services to films that I show to them, like, this might be worth this. And they're like, yes, great. Gloria Petrosky is like the head of that, and she really wants to help women filmmakers. And then about a year ago, Rajendra Roy, who's the chief curator of film at MoMA, was like, I really want to, we've worked together before just on some other things at Nighthawk, and he was like, I want you to do something here. I kind of want to like have some fresh voices in. And I'm like, well, I just did this campaign. What about this? This is an abbreviated story. And then he goes, well, how about instead of just one, we make these beats? So it's not just like a one and done, like, but it shows a commitment that you have, that MoMA has to these. And then the work that you're doing at Nighthawk will be like continuous heartbeats throughout this whole thing. So that's a screening series that we do somewhat quarterly. Mm-hmm. We've done 2. So it's feature films directed by women, usually their debut or follow-up feature. Cool. Short films precede each feature film. Mm-hmm. And then the first year I invited No Budge, which is an online screening platform for independent films, mostly short films, that Kentucker Oddly runs. And he does such a really good job of being inclusive with women directors. Mm-hmm. And so it was important for me to have like a man there who's like just doing the right thing because it's the thing. It's just a thing.
Right.
And I work with him a lot at Nighthawk, and he's amazing. And then this past iteration that we had that Clara's Ghost was in was The Ice Slicer, and which is Dan Schoenbrunn and Vanessa McDonald. And it's kind of this like weird punk rock TV variety show. And their new season is coming out. And so they had a women directed episode of a series of shorts that was guest curated by three women directors. So we had that. So that's going to keep continuing to kind of, because our aim with the series is to be like, okay, these women are making their first and second features. What next? You know? And so it's been nice. Like, we booked a preview screening of Little Woods. And then it's like, Nia DaCosta is directing Candyman. That's what we're talking about. You know, where's the next step? Where's the next access?
Right. And also, I think people might not realize how important it is to give those opportunities for women to make short films, because short films is often how filmmakers' careers start. You make a short, it goes to festivals, people see it, and then maybe when you're trying to get money together for a feature, that's your proof of concept, or it's your reel, basically.
If you can make a good short, you can make a good feature, because making good shorts that are like 10, 12 minutes are
it's really hard.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
And especially if it's a comedy, forget it. Like, very rare.
The budget might be smaller, but all of the other work is the same, if not more, than doing a feature.
So Future of Female, the future of film is female.com is where you'll find like who we funded, news, how you can submit. I've just, Film Freeway is letting me use their like platform to accept submissions. To kind of see what we're up to. But
That's, and then every other day of the week, you can find Karen at Nighthawk.
Yes.
Maybe she'll even serve you a beer when she wants to remind herself of
Don't
her humble
Pictionary
beginnings.
Don't play Pictionary, because it'll piss Jesse off.
I'm not above it. I will serve you a drink if I need to.
Excellent. Okay. And we, Alana, are...
at Female Gaze Pod on Twitter and also Instagram. Just a reminder that we love hearing from you guys, so keep giving us your hot takes, because we want to put those on the wheel.
Yeah. Oh, and Karen, since you did tease it, are you keeping or leaving Michael Jackson's music?
Oh, yeah.
It's a weird thing, because my four-year-old son has become obsessed with him right at the peak moment of this. And so it's a debate.
Okay.
We're just kind of, we're trying to transition him to Prince.
Okay. That's good.
Cute. You know,
great solution.
Cute.
Love that.
Yeah. Definitely.
That is a good life hack, guys.
Yeah. There you go. Life hack.
That's what we're trying to do. I don't think Jackson 5 is out.
Okay. That's fair. Don't punish them all.
But not right now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Sore.
It's a little
sore. All
right,
guys. Thanks for listening. Pump that Prince. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.